You're listening to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide with Bart Zandbergen, your distinguished host and certified financial planner.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen. And as usual, we have in studio today, Paul, our engineer.
Yes, sir. Always looking sharper than I am here today. I feel underdressed when you walk in the studio here.
Oh, you're much too kind, Paul. And with this beautiful weather today, are you missing Michigan today?
No. We're talking about your guest is from Michigan. We'll talk about maybe she liked the cold back. I couldn't wait to get out of it.
Maybe so. And with that said, our very special guest today is Nicole Anderson from Anderson Law Group. Now, Nicole, you and I have known each other for quite some time now. We've done a lot of work together. But why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, how you got here to California, how you got to be this amazing lawyer with this law firm that you have. I'm sure they were dying to know.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Bart, for having me. I think we've known each other for almost 10 years now.
Yeah, and I think you're right, yeah.
Truly been a pleasure getting to know you and working with you.
My pleasure.
So a little bit about myself. I am from Michigan, and my husband and I, Peter, met in Colorado. We went to Colorado College for undergrad. We started dating our freshman year, and then we both did our... Our years abroad, I went to the London School of Economics and Peter went off to New Zealand, but we stayed together. And after college, I worked for a year for the County of Sonoma as their economic project coordinator and decided I better go do something else. So I'm not working for the county for the rest of my life. My father's an estate planning business law attorney back in Michigan, and I had grown up working with him, so it was a very logical decision to go to law school. I went back to Michigan and graduated from Wayne State University, and then I came out to California once we were engaged and did my LLM with an emphasis in tax from Chapman University and decided to start my own practice, growing up with a father doing... what my father does, I should say.
Yeah.
I knew how I wanted to run my practice. I knew I also wanted to be a parent. And so I just decided to open my own firm. And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. So it's been great. We practice exclusively in estate planning and business law. And it's myself and one other attorney and two support staff. And we work mostly with high net worth individuals and business owners in, you know, coastal Orange County, I would say.
Sure, sure.
As you do too.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So as we know, in December, there was a new tax law passed. Lots of different areas were affected, certainly in estate planning. So what should the listeners know? What should clients know about the new tax law as it relates to estate planning?
Right. So this was a very significant change in the tax law for estate planning. There's two types of tax that we are concerned about in estate planning, major types of tax, I should say. The first is gift and the second is estate. So when someone wants to make a lifetime gift, they are now allowed to make that gift $10 million, which is indexed for inflation. So it's going to be roughly $11.2 million this year that they can gift to someone during their lifetime free of estate tax. That was, you know, historically it was, you know, when I started practicing, it was around $1 million, and then it went up to 3.5, and then it was $5 million for a while, indexed for inflation. So it doubled. It went from 5 to 10 million. And with that indexing for inflation, we feel it'll be around 11.2. So that's on the gift tax side.
Okay.
On the estate tax side, it's the same as a gift tax. So on someone's passing, they can leave roughly $11.2 million to anyone without there being an estate tax. An estate tax is also known as the death tax, and that's, you know, a 40% tax. So that's a big deal.
That's a lot.
So
right.
If you're married, a married couple can pass $22.4 million before there's any death tax. That's a huge departure from our lower estate tax regime. Now, those laws are scheduled to sunset in 2025. So this is a temporary, you know,
sure,
tax change.
Right.
It could be changed earlier by an act of Congress. It could also, it's scheduled to sunset and go back to $5 million index for inflation. But if you and I had a crystal ball, we'd...
That's right. We wouldn't be sitting here.
We wouldn't be sitting here. So you don't know. And there's just... So those are two very, you know, important numbers. There's also what you're allowed to give annually before you file that gift tax has increased to $15,000 per person. Mm-hmm. So that's called the annual gift exclusion. So you're allowed to give annually $15,000. You can gift during your lifetime, 11.2 roughly. What you gift during your lifetime does go against what you can give on your death.
Right. So just so the listener, there's some misunderstanding, and so the listeners will know, in order for a couple to do that, basically 11.2 times 2 or 22.4, they need something, right?
Well, they actually should have something, but they don't need it any longer. So there's also the rule portability.
Yeah.
You do have to do something. Okay. In order to elect portability, it's not an automatic election. It's... You do have to file a 706 estate tax return and make an election on a timely return. So you're right. They do have to do something or they have to have a trust set up.
Okay. The trust is obviously the recommended way.
Right.
Okay.
So one important thing about married couple, too, is there's never any gift or estate tax between a married couple. So that's the unlimited marital deduction. That's one of the reasons... the same-sex couple case was so important for that specific case because it also allowed same-sex couples to enjoy that unlimited marital deduction or the ability for a married couple to pass assets back and forth without any gift tax or estate tax.
Okay.
So estate tax is really a second-to-die tax. It wouldn't come into play until the second spouse dies, but you're absolutely right. You have to do something to take advantage of the deceased spouse's exemption, or you could risk losing it.
And not to complicate things, but if a spouse was a non-citizen, there's also issues, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Then you have to have a special trust, and you have to have a U.S. trustee to pass on those assets to a non-citizen spouse. Yes, estate planning and tax laws are never not complicated.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
One important thing would be that under the new tax code, they retained the step-up in tax basis. That is something that they were discussing eliminating.
Right.
So what that means is when someone passes away, you get what is called a step-up in tax basis, so you get to inherit that date-of-death value. That is important if you sell that asset. If you sell an asset, then there's not, you know, after someone passes away, there's not a capital gain tax.
Yeah.
And so that's very important, especially you and I both living in Laguna Beach. Think
that's
about
right.
A house, right?
Right?
The house was bought for $1 million. When someone passed away, it's now worth $3 million. So if you inherit that house at $3 million, you get to step up the basis to $3 million. If you sell it closely thereafter the death, you know, you would get to not pay
capital gains.
Right.
Right.
Versus if there wasn't that step up, that could... know that was going to give people a significant tax burden.
And that's a huge planning tool, right?
Yes.
We use that. That's good. Okay, so given the new changes, what do you think what should every client, regardless of their net worth, be thinking about?
Well, just like in your business, it's very important for clients to review what they have, you know, their assets allocated
in and
management. So same with our clients. It's really important for them to review their trust. Get the old estate plan off the shelf, dust it off, and see what it actually says.
Right.
Because so many things change in people's lives. Those very important, you know, trustees or people that are appointed as guardians, that those people can change. And especially given the new tax law, so many people have what we call AB trusts.
Right.
So that would be... when one spouse passes away, the trust splits into two trusts, one for the survivor and one for the decedent spouse's assets. And if that trust is a bypass trust and now the exemption is so high, what it's doing is it's giving the beneficiaries, whether those are kids or loved ones, a possible tax problem. Because they are not going to enjoy what we just talked about, that step up in tax basis on assets of the B trust.
Okay.
So the B trust gets one step up at the date of the first spouse, but it doesn't get that second step up. So if there's a long period of time between when the first spouse dies and the second,
right,
then you've given the beneficiaries a capital gains tax problem that they wouldn't have had if the trust was structured differently. So it could be structured all to the survivor, or if you still want that protection of the irrevocable trust, you would want it to be a marital trust.
And okay.
A qualified terminal interest and property trust, or Q-tip trust.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, and we were drafting those trusts too, seven years ago.
That's right.
Not that it's wrong. It just needs to be revised. And so what we're doing now is we're making sure that the surviving spouse has the option to disclaim or make that election that trust could be a Q-tip or a marital trust versus a bypass trust.
So it's making an option either or. Okay.
And so that would give the beneficiaries that step up if the surviving spouse made that election. So it's always important to have that kind of, let's see what the tax laws are and what the assets are and the possible time between the deaths are.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have flexibility.
Yeah, yeah. So on average, how often should someone get their trust reviewed or revisited?
I think on average, every 3 to 5 years is probably sufficient. One of the nice things we have at our office is our client care program, and that's an annual review program. So we try to see our clients or at least talk to them on the phone annually.
Okay.
But if that doesn't work, I think every 3 to 5 is appropriate.
Okay.
And this huge change in tax law would warrant a call to anyone's estate planning attorney and CPA.
Right. Well, that's certainly one similarity that you and your business and my business have, is just review, no matter what the interval is, but some sort of a review.
Exactly.
Because
life changes.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? All right. We've got several great questions left, but we are going to have a quick break now, and then we'll get right back to it.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge, with the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days, all with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, back to Bart and his guest.
Okay, Nicole, I think we were just finishing up on what everyone should do with regards to their estate plan, regardless of their net worth. So I think you had a couple more tips on that.
Yes, another tip is to review your assets. And I can't tell you how important this is. I see clients every week that have a beautiful estate plan but are missing one or more of their assets to be properly titled into that trust.
Right, right, right.
So I can use myself as an example. I did a refinance recently on my house, and after my refi, my home was not retitled in the name of the trust, right? So I caught that, but most people don't catch that. You know,
right.
It's a busy transaction. So you have to make sure your property is in the trust. We also work with your office, Bart. So and make sure all of the financial accounts are properly titled or have beneficiaries. So all the investment accounts, if they're stock or cash accounts, those can be titled directly in the name of the trust. But assets such as beneficiary or IRAs and life insurance would have beneficiary designations. So we would work with an advisor like yourself on making sure that we have proper beneficiaries, either the spouse or the trust.
Now we know what goes in a trust. What would not go in a trust?
Right. So things that do not go in the trust are individual retirement accounts. So 401ks, IRAs, those have to be in the owner's
name
and they have beneficiaries on them. So typically for an IRA or a 401k, we suggest if they're married that their spouse is the primary, and if they have minor children, the trust for the benefit of each child is listed as a contingent. But if they have adult children, we would suggest just the spouse is the primary and the adult children are the contingent. And that just is because IRAs have special tax rules. We want to ensure that the stretch out provisions of the IRA are not lost.
So I was just going to ask you on that. I know that this gets a little more complicated, and this seems to be kind of a revolving answer. So for the stretch out, we can sometimes use a trust and still have a stretch out. And by the way, definition of stretch out, everyone, is once you inherit something that in an IRA, typically the taxes are due then and there that year. Stretch out means how long can we stretch it out so that you can pay the taxes a little bit over many years.
And defer the tax.
Right.
It's one of the greatest benefits of a retirement plan, tax deferral.
Sure. So we can, there are circumstances, correct, where we can use a trust for
that. You can absolutely use a trust. It just has to be a qualified trust. So you have to make sure that you qualify your trust, and you're supposed to provide a copy of the trust to the plan administrator. You have to make all charitable distributions within a calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
And so the issue with the trust is, what if you name one beneficiary that's 90 and another beneficiary that's 5?
Right.
They use the oldest beneficiary as the stretch.
Oh, that's right.
So that's why when we're naming the trust, we like to separate it. We say the Anderson Family Trust for the benefit of William, the Anderson Family Trust for the benefit of Barrett, so that then they can use their own life expectancies for the stretch.
Okay.
So it is a little technical. It definitely can be done. It just has to be done properly.
All right. So the takeaway on that is work with someone that knows what they're doing.
Like yourself.
And you yourself.
Yes.
Okay. So we kind of cover what everyone should do, regardless of their net worth, with regards to their estate planning. Let's focus now on the high net worth.
Okay.
So what should they be doing that's different?
So remember, the high net worth individuals now have this opportunity to gift during their lifetime the $10 million index for inflation. So I'm just going to call it 11.2.
Okay.
That number hasn't been exactly enumerated by the IRS yet.
We'll take it.
And so these strategies, so there's always a play, right? Do you gift during your lifetime so then the appreciation grows outside of your estate? The downside of gifting during your lifetime is that basis, again, we've talked about, that then the person that receives the gifts inherits the basis at the time of the gift.
Okay.
Versus leaving the asset in the estate
and, it step
and
up.
The appreciation, but the step up.
Right.
So for most high net worth clients, it's going to make sense to consider a gifting strategy.
Okay.
Depends on what their asset allocation is and what they have.
Yeah.
But let's say they have a large real estate portfolio or something that we could gift now and enjoy a valuation discount, right?
Okay.
So perhaps you gift, there's an LLC that holds some real estate that's not really low basis. Let's say the basis is okay. They bought it
recently
rather than 50 years ago.
Okay.
So you can take that LLC interest and gift a portion of it into an irrevocable, so there's two types of trust, revocable and irrevocable trust for the benefit of their loved ones or children. So by doing that, you can get a discount because, let's say you don't gift the whole thing, 60% of an entity is not worth as much as 100%.
Right.
Who wants to buy a 60% interest and have to deal with the family?
Right.
So you can receive a 30, 40% valuation discount, gift it into the trust, where the trust maker, the grantor of that trust, the parent, let's just say parent and child, still has control, which is very important. Most clients don't want to give up control.
Sure.
But that gives the appreciation out of the estate. And we can also, you know, mess around with income, whether it's management fees or other ways for the grantor, that parent, to still receive some of the income, but also, if they want, share the income with their children.
Yeah.
So there's another special type of irrevocable trust that we're talking to our clients right now, and that's a, we call it a Nevada flexible gift trust. And we actually have a mutual client, Bart, so we could talk about our mutual client, and we can talk about some of the strategies that we did this client.
Yeah.
So we'll just call him Jim.
Okay.
And Jim is married. So we can talk about the flexible gift trust for Jim, and then we can also talk about some of the income tax planning tools that we did for Jim, which includes a charitable lead trust. So Jim has all of his assets properly titled at your office.
He
already has a revocable trust.
Yeah.
So some of the things that we're talking about now are more the advanced planning tools.
Right, because his net worth is about $6 million-ish.
Right.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we did is we did a gift to a flexible gift trust. And the reason we did that is because we wanted to take some stock that's not worth, in closely held business, that's not worth that much right now, but we think it's going to be sold and worth a lot someday.
Right.
So we transferred it to a trust, and we set this trust up where it's for the benefit of his wife and then his children.
Right.
And then the wife also set up the same trust for his benefit and the children. And what that allows them to do is still live off of the income.
The income.
Not give up that income until they're both, or until one of them is deceased.
Right.
So that first strategy, you know, allowed them to remove that appreciating stock from their taxable estate. And we started working with him before the new changes in the tax law. So they were very close to having an estate tax problem.
Yeah, that was at the limit, right. This was years ago, right.
So I really like that concept. And why we call it flexible is if Jim ever wants to add himself back as a beneficiary of that trust he set up for his wife and kids, he can.
Yeah.
Right? That's not allowed in California. So that's why we go to Nevada. And there's also some asset protection benefits to doing that. So obviously there's estate tax benefits to doing that. But a nice, you know, other benefit is the asset protection of those assets against any possible creditors, as long as he meets those requirements. So that's the gifting.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing about the gifting, let's say he decides to add himself back. Well, he doesn't have to add himself back as a beneficiary of the entire amount. He can also add himself back as a beneficiary of just a sub-trust and only receive.
Right. So
he doesn't have to pull that entire asset back in his estate if he changes his mind.
Right.
But that would be nice, because what if in 2025 they eliminate the estate tax?
Right.
So if there's no estate tax, we'd want that asset to get the step up in tax basis.
Sure. So he pulls it all back in?
Right.
Okay.
So that was the gifting. So now we can talk about some of the income tax planning we did.
Yeah.
So I think how did that, it was he was going to receive some deferred comp, correct?
Yes, yeah, so it was a year of large income. And I'm just going to take a step backward. I'm kind of thinking of a pyramid, and the way we structured Jim's estate plan was like a pyramid with a nice strong foundation. Mm-hmm. So he has a revocable trust. He has life insurance and an irrevocable life insurance trust.
Exactly.
So life insurance usually comes out, the proceeds are income tax free, but not estate tax free.
Correct.
So with your help, the irrevocable life insurance trust, now all the life insurance proceeds avoids income tax and estate tax.
Exactly. Thanks for remembering.
I kind of consider that the bottom rung.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did the gifting. Now we're talking about the tax efficiencies.
Income tax planning.
So there we did a combination of donor advised fund and then the CLTs.
Right.
Charitable lead trusts.
Right. And we did that because Jim was experiencing a very large year of income.
Yeah.
And in future years, he was not going to be receiving this income benefit. It was his last year or years of employment.
Correct.
His then current position. So he was facing a large income tax bill. And he's also charitably inclined. He was already regularly giving to charity. So we did a combination. So a donor advised fund, you helped him set that up, and that takes no legal work. So your office could handle that management of that fund, and he can make a contribution at any time to that donor advised fund and
make withdrawals anytime, or to make contributions, charitable contributions from that at any time.
Right. So he gets the tax deduction the year of the gift the donor advised fund, but he can give that money away at any time.
Right.
And it is donor advised, so he has to make a recommendation, and it, in the back office definitely vets that it's a qualified 501c3 that's getting the the deduction. But that was a great, easy way, and then we combined it with a charitable lead trust, which gave him even a larger income tax deduction. But in that case, he was willing to give up the right to some income for a period of years, 10 years.
Yeah.
And at the end of the term of the years, he was able to receive his principal back.
Right.
So for charity to receive the trust income for a term of years, he got another income tax deduction the year he needed to get that deduction. But he didn't permanently release his money to charity as he did in the donor advised fund.
Not that we had the foresight, but with the change in the tax, the state tax laws, receiving the money back, I don't think it's going to be a bad thing for him.
Right.
And then I don't know if you remember, but the donor advised fund is actually the recipient of this charitable lead trust.
Right.
So he has more control on an annual basis where the money goes.
Right. And he can change his mind on those charitable recipients at any time without having to do a trust amendment.
Yeah.
So that's a great
overall plan.
Great overall plan.
Okay. So we're nearing the end. So I want to ask you one last question. So I know that you're not a CPA, Nicole, but in general, what should clients know about the new tax laws as it relates to business law? Got about a minute.
Okay. So I would say the first thing is it's a great time to talk to your trusted advisor, such as your financial advisor and CPA. And it's a time in life to consider entities if you have a valid business. So C-Corps now enjoy 21% flat tax rate. Pass-through entities such as S-Corporations, I think, are going to become very popular because they're going to allow you to receive that 20% deduction of qualified business income. Now, that calculation is quite complicated. We probably don't have time to go in it today. But if someone is an individual and making less than $157,500, then they were married and making $315,000. Those more challenging rules, such as are they a specified service business or are they can't receive more than 20% of their W-2, don't apply to them.
Right.
So it's a nice way if you're an entity to receive, to get a deduction.
Yeah.
Also, if you have, for example, an investment property in an LLC operating as a business, those rules on the $10,000 cap of state and local taxes don't apply to that business.
That's right.
So it's a good time to consider whether an entity is right for you. And I think S-Corps will probably become even more popular.
Yeah.
To get around the wage issue.
Yeah, that one's a little more complicated for me. We're going to have to spend more time on that, but there's definitely some planning opportunities there. All right, Nicole, it's been a pleasure having you in studio today. And I have my listeners know now, I have the honor of asking you the one final thought question.
Great.
And that is, please share with us your ultimate lesson learned over your tenure as a legal professional.
Well, I've learned a lot of lessons as a lawyer and a business owner, but I think my number one is treating people and your employees, so clients and employees, how you would like to be treated, so with respect, because all you really have is your reputation, and whether you're having an on or an off day, those around you deserve to be treated well and with respect, and I think that's how I've grown my business, all word of mouth, and people are happy, and you just have to remember that everyone that is walking through your door, it's a challenging thing to talk about. We're talking about either forming a business or talking about their death. So really giving them that integrity to talk about it.
So, okay, falling back on the golden rule. I love it.
It's true.
Okay, last couple of seconds. So I know you're pregnant. You're not drinking wine now, but you spent time in Sonoma. What's your favorite wine?
Pinot Noir from the Russian River Valley.
All right. Down. Love it. Love it. All right, Nicole, thanks again for joining us in studio today. For those of you who want to learn more about Nicole, visit her at www.andersonlawgroupinc.com. Thanks so much to everyone who has tuned in. We look forward to being back in the studio next week. Cheers.
Thank you, Bart.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting www.bartzandbergen.com. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer on the Zandbergen Report? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com.